Welcome back to the show. Making his international debut here, we've got Mr. Nick Leeson. Nick, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Let's kick off. You're a Man City fan. Do you go and watch Man City at all these days?
I do, not as much as I'd like, but yeah, I still get over there. I've got some friends at City, so as often as I can. Obviously, live in Ireland these days, so don't get across the water quite as much as I would have done years ago when I was living in the UK.
And I watched them play Chelsea, and I thought they were the real deal.
Yeah, they're phenomenal at the moment, and they look fantastic. But you know, they always fail to really hit the heights over a long period of time. So you expect it to drop off at some stage, and you hope it doesn't happen. But with City, it tends to.
Right. In terms of your life, there's been a film about you, documentaries, and obviously you've hit the headlines. What are you doing these days?
I do a couple of different things. I mean, since I was released from prison in Singapore, I speak extensively on the after dinner circuit, talk at a lot of conferences. That's what I'm in London for today. But equally so, I'm involved in an online education platform at the moment that looks at the financial markets. It takes a slightly different approach to trading the markets than a lot of the other people who are out there advertising at the moment. You know, we don't say it's easy because it's not. We don't say that you make huge sums of money because you don't. And it focuses really on the education. And I think my name symbolises more than anything else the fact that you can lose money, that it's difficult. And there's huge downside if you don't get that education and understand the markets.
So if you've got 100 people in the room when you're doing one of these conferences, okay, if they were specially picked as financial gurus, would half of them clap and half of them boo? Or
no, they all clap. I mean, thankfully, it's very rare that you get somebody boo. It did happen once. There's only been, like, I've been doing this for, it was released in 99, so 18 years I've been doing after dinners and talking at conferences. So there's only one occasion where somebody booed. It was for a private equity client. The event was at St Andrews Golf Course in Scotland, and when I made that, you know, I often start by saying I'm never sure whether you should clap or boo, because genuinely I'm not.
Yep.
And then one gentleman stood up and he started booing. So he knew who I was. I didn't know who he was. Asked him to introduce himself. His name was Sir Gavin Laird. Everybody in the audience had a title. So Sir Gavin was the head of the TUC, personal friend of Maggie Thatcher, was on the board of banking supervision after the collapse of the bank. And his reason for booing is that, obviously, he was involved in the board of banking supervision, but his reason for booing was that he believed that what I did was meticulous, it was very sophisticated, it was very well thought out, and that I sought to undermine the banking system in the UK. Those were his reasons. And, you know, we didn't really get into debate because the rest of the room completely disagreed with him, so they started to ask him questions rather than me. So it became the easiest after dinner that I've ever done, after potentially looking by the names of the people who are in the audience that it was going to be the most difficult. What happened during that period is really crude. You know, it was just reacting to situations.
Yep.
The checks were completely non-existent. I was never challenged. Lots of disparate technology, not communicating with each other, people not asking sensible questions, and any challenges that were made were completely superficial, easily to divert, and pretty much me just giving cock and bull answers on the spot as the questions were asked, but you know, no real basis to it.
In terms of my life, we've had chapters, okay, and if you go into a job and it's a bad job, you close the chapter, go into a new job. Have you been able to close those chapters?
Yes and no, I suppose. I mean, it sounds like a bit of a strange answer, but yes, I think I've closed it personally. You do come across people who still harbour a grudge, and that's okay. I can accept that. You know, so I'm quite rational. I look at every person and every situation with a blank sheet of paper. I'm not trying to influence people's opinion. People who know me know me. People who read a book about me know the book. So,
yeah.
And the two are very distinct and separate. So, and that's fine. You know, I can understand that. It's a similar sort of situation when I came back from Singapore many years ago and I was dealing with the liquidators. Me and the liquidators could have a laugh as we sat here, you know, over a coffee. You know, maybe go to the pub after we've had a meeting about what went on during a period of what was going on in Barings. And then they'd have to address the media and tell the media what was going on and how they were going to slap an injunction on me, how I was allowed to do this, I wasn't allowed to do that. So there's a business face, which is presented to the world at large, and then there's them as individuals. And so you could quite easily get upset about that dichotomy that exists and think, you know, why are they doing this to me? Why are they doing that? But as long as you understand that they've got a business professional face that needs to take appropriate action, and then you've got them as human beings and individuals and can treat the two separately, then you can get along with the situation. And so, you know, that's what I had to do. Like being in prison, you know, I was in prison with triad gang members, very dangerous people. Not the type of people that I used to walk the streets with in Watford or in the city, although maybe some of the ones in the city were equally as dangerous, but in a different way from a trading perspective. But yeah, like I've always been, a few years ago I was at a board meeting for a big bank in South Africa, not because I was a member of the board, but I was invited along to talk to the board about risk and things that had happened in my life and things that were going on in South Africa. And one of the board members, the lady who was in charge of risk, she asked me a really clever question, I thought, which I had to think about the answer to. And she said, you know, in terms of, you know, your own personal skills, what do you think are the, you know, the two things that have served you best, not just in that period, but throughout your lifetime? And the answer to the question, and it took a bit of thought, is that I'm extremely socially adept, right? So I could pull on the council house that I grew up with. Equally, I could, you know, get along and prosper working in a very blue-blooded bank in the city. And then at a third stage in my life, because you were talking about stages, I'm in a prison where everybody is a triad gang member. And I managed to get through that through being socially adept, being able to mix. And whilst the people were never my friends, you know, they might have thought they were. Do you know what I mean? So yep. I think it was being as socially adept as I was one. Now, I wouldn't have been a confident person. I wouldn't have been, you know, particularly extrovert. But, you know, able to mix and get along, work hard and get the job done. And get the job up until I was 25, get the job done successfully, which saw me progress through the ranks.
Okay, so let's wrap up. Watching this for the first time, I'm thinking about having a career in the city in finance.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to any youngster watching this?
It's simple advice. There's two things that I always say to any audience, right? I was 25 years old when I moved to Singapore. I was 28 years old when I found myself in jail in Singapore. Probably two messages that could have really changed that scenario. The first one is to always ask for help and advice. You know, I didn't. I thought, you know, I could cope with everything and ultimately found out that I couldn't. Probably saw asking for help and advice as a sign of weakness at the time, whereas what I should have been encouraged to see it as was a sign of trying to do things correctly. Then my path would have been very different because I was surrounded by people who could have helped me. You know, I wasn't the first person to put a loss into an illegal trading account. Happened every day at Barings over that period, you know, whether it was somebody in Japan, somebody in New York, or somebody in Singapore. You know, so I could have been directed along a different path. And then I suppose the second piece of advice, a good friend of mine who runs a European bank uses it to explain to all of his employees. He tells them that he expects them to make mistakes. He doesn't encourage them to make mistakes, but he says, look, you are going to make mistakes. But whatever you do, when you make a mistake, come and talk to me. Never hide those mistakes. You know, I'm here to talk to you, help you through the issues. And I use similar sort of analogies to explain stuff to my children. You know, I'm there. You know, they're going to do things wrong during their, you know, their pre-adult years, throughout their adult years. Always talk to me. Always ask me for help. There's always going to be consequence to actions, which I think teenagers find difficult to understand. But the consequence is only there for a short period of time, and I'll help them through it. You know, there might be punishment needed, but, you know, it's only going to be for a short period of time. And you get through it. I got through it. You know, I'm 50 years of age now, and you know, I spent 4.5 years in a fairly tough prison. Come through some tough times, and live in embodiment of the fact that if it doesn't kill you, it'll only make you stronger.
Nick Leeson, thank you very much indeed.